Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:06 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 2nd. Well, in here today we heard that Christine Lagarde is very likely to become the next ECB president. Well, that basically excises Jens Weidmann from taking that post. It removes any doubt that the ECB is going to have a dove at the helm. And that means that we're definitely going to have an additional round of quantitative easing and negative interest rates. The only question is when. But bunds are already pricing that in, and the bund yield pulled back in a reasonably aggressive manner over the last couple of days. It's already in record negative territory at negative 36 basis points. So bund yields are already pricing in that we're going to have negative rates, and of course, now an increasingly large proportion of the entire German yield curve is negative. There is a realistic possibility that the whole yield curve will in fact go negative, and I think that's something that people are starting to wake up to, that there is a real potential that we're going to see an additional round of extraordinary measures introduced in Europe. And part of the reason for that is because the EU economy is continuing to slow, and that PMI figures right across the region, with the only exception being France, are in negative territory. When we think about the fact that today the Italian 2-year went negative for a brief period, and certainly that is something that nobody really was willing to countenance when we had the significant pop on the upside at in 2018. Now, of course, there is a short-term overbought condition here. I think anyone can see that we've had, if we just turn, say, the Bund price around and look at it on a price basis, it's as clear as day that we have this very overbought condition, but there's no sign of it ending either. When we look at how that is affecting the euro, well, the euro was pretty much unchanged in here today. I think the clear change that we have seen, though, in the price over the last 7 or 8 weeks has been that we now have higher reaction lows, we have higher highs. The bigger picture is that the price has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and that the overall downward bias remains intact. So we have the short-term uptrend versus the medium-term downtrend. There is a war going on right now for dominance. Really, a sustained move below 112 would be required to question that this isn't a demand-dominated environment for the euro, not least because if the ECB is engaging in additional, or I think priming itself to engage in additional support measures, the USA is probably further along, and they are actively removing supports from the dollar. Well, I'm posting an article in here today with Nouriel Roubini at China's World Economic Forum, and he is called Dr. Doom for good reason, but and he has obviously had a spotty history. He's much better at calling tops than bottoms, let's put it that way. And he got one big call right back in 2006 and 7. And now he's looking for his second big call because he's missed just about all of the bull market in the intervening period. But I think it's very important to marry up very courageous statements with the reality being provided by the market. Well, the first one, I think, is oil. Oil prices were down today in a dynamic manner. $2.45 is a significant move. It confirms resistance in the region of the trend mean. And this does look like a return to a more volatile and trading environment with potentially a downward bias. It rather confirms that resistance around $80 is a very real phenomenon. Well, in order for one of Nouriel Roubini's big calls, which would be a massive escalation in tensions with Iran, to come to fruition in terms of a geopolitical risk or a risk in terms of the wider global economy, then oil prices would need to be surging higher. And we just don't have that. This looks nothing like what we had back in 2010, And it most particularly does not look like what we had back in 2007 and halfway through 2008. It's those kinds of moves can really have a deleterious effect on global economic growth. I think that it's quite accurate to state that every $10 move in oil shaves about a tenth of a percent off of global growth. So a $50 move in oil would shave at least a half a percent, if not more, off of global economic growth. By the same token, whenever prices fall, well, then it adds a tenth of a percent, or perhaps even 0.2 of a percent, to global growth. These are rather important figures, particularly in view of the fact that I continue to think that oil prices are in a secular bear market, that we are going to be in a volatile ranging phase for the foreseeable future, and that could last for really quite some time. The reality is the USA is now a major oil producer, having been the world's largest consumer as recently as a decade ago, and that is a profound change, both in terms of the energy landscape, but also in terms of geopolitics and the status quo between producers and consumers. When you get the world's largest consumer becoming the largest swing producer, then that is going to cause some upset. Then, of course, you have the fact that natural gas prices continue to trend downwards. Well, we know that there is support around the $2 area, or at least whenever prices fall below $2. We're not quite there yet. It does suggest that we're going to see prices get down to $2 and potentially even lower than that before we see a meaningful rebound. If we were truly to break out of this secular bear market for natural gas prices, well, we would have to see a new source of demand coming through. Well, that could come through simply by virtue of outsized global economic growth. It could come through as a result of the evolution of the hydrogen fuel cell market, or the provision of a hydrogen economy. And I think that is one of the more likely scenarios, considering that prices are so low. Then, of course, you have the potential that people are going to transition away from coal and into natural gas, so there's a substitution argument because prices are so low. But what we are definitely presented with right now is a weak price environment, and certainly there's scope for a rebound because these low prices will shut in supply eventually. But there's no evidence yet that any one of those three potential sources of new outsized demand are really affecting the market right now. So that's, I think, an important point. Well, the other thing that Nouriel Roubini is talking about is the clear risk that we're going to have a recession. Now, this isn't idle chatter. This is something that a lot of people have been talking about, and we know that there is a delayed reaction to monetary tightening, and the fact that the Federal Reserve tightened interest rates all the way through to the end of last year is being felt by the global economy in particular, less so by the US economy. The question we don't know is what the delayed effect of trade tariffs are likely to be. But so far, the S&P 500 is still right in the region of its all-time peak. And the fact that we have so much bearish commentary, the fact that people are talking about the market falling upwards of 50% from current levels, then that is not what we would anticipate at a major market top. It's usually the other way around. It's usually that the people who are making bearish prognostications are vilified by the market. But they're being lionized at present, and that's something that we just don't see at major market tops. Most particularly when we look at the price action and just forget what anyone else is saying, the consolidation that we've had over the course of the last 4 months looks like a bullish consolidation in the region of the upper side of the range. And now we're pushing on to new high ground. This looks like a breakout. It looks like the continuation of the medium-term bull market. We certainly had a hairy period at the end of last year. We had a very significant pullback that chastened the Federal Reserve. One thing that we've also seen, and certainly we saw it last year, was that the market does tend to test new central bankers. And that happened with Paul Volcker. It happened with Alan Greenspan in the form of the 1987 crash and the collapse of long-term capital management. It happened for Ben Bernanke in spades with the credit crisis. It also, we saw a drawdown when Janet Yellen took over, and we saw a two significant drawdowns when Jay Powell took over. Well, the market needed confirmation that they had a bull, that there was going to be a Powell put. Now they have it, so the market can start to advance once more. Then, of course, we have the continued move in treasuries, and this is part of the commonality we're seeing right across the global sovereign bond markets. 10-year treasury yields were at a new low in here today and are now extending the move below 2%, the 10-year treasury yield. It's so far this consolidation has been very mild, and it also we can see that it has been considerably tighter than the last two. That suggests that the pace of the advance is picking up. I think when we then go back and think about the 10-year yield on a longer term basis, the failed upside break above 3% and the larger dynamic of the failure suggests that we are going to go back down and test the lower side of this range. And the lower side of the range is at 1.5%. So markets are already pricing in that we are moving into additional quantitative easing, that modern monetary theory is going to be realized, that there is simply an inevitability to all of these arguments, because with greater geopolitical tensions, with the rise of populism, with the fact that the global economy is slowing down, it would almost be viewed as possibly even unpatriotic not to continue to extend liquidity. And it is really only a question of how extraordinary the monetary measures that are going to be followed are. Well, that's why gold is starting to rally. It's quite an odd condition. If we really start to think about these things, that the stock market, the bond market, and gold markets are all firm and in exactly the same period of time. Well, what that very clearly suggests is that we are at a period right now where there is a clear risk of monetary devaluation, that we're getting asset price inflation right across asset classes, and that is supportive of the view that it's rather than it being asset price inflation, it is about currency devaluation, and not just for one currency, but all currencies. That is part of the rationale for these moves. Gold today was up $30, and that's a pretty substantial move, and it rather suggests that we have a low of at least near-term significance. There's a clear potential that this is a first step above the base. If it is, well, then we may just see a lengthier pause here and a range forming between about 1375 and 1450. Of course, considering the pace with which yields are contracting and the very significant quantity of bonds that are trading at negative yields, well, that's where you get the most bullish argument for gold. It's when you get positive real interest rate, excuse me, you get a positive carry from gold because of negative real interest rates. And that is the direction in which we're heading. And when you put it in those terms, then the breakout in gold is likely to persist. One thing that we see after every big breakout, and this is a big breakout. Gold prices have been going sideways for 6 years. 6 years of ranging can be resolved in a very short period of time, and that kind of breakout tends to be surprising. The bulls tend to feel vindicated and they become progressively more bullish. The bears start to think, well, golly, the price has gone up a lot. It's probably going to pull back now. The hallmark of a base formation is failed upside breaks. So this will encourage some people at least to start shorting. Of course, if what that then contributes to is some supply and demand starting to come back into balance. That's how ranges form. The hallmark of a new bull market is the breakout needs to be sustained. That is the clear change. When the hallmark of a base formation is breakouts are not sustained, then the defining characteristic of a new bull market is that breakouts are sustained, that people are not just willing to buy the breakout, but that they're willing to continue to buy at historically new 6-year highs, that they are sufficiently confident in the bull market hypothesis, that they are willing to support prices, that they're willing to buy every dip. And when that occurs, then we have the evidence that we are in a demand-dominated environment, which is what we're starting to see in gold. And that is also representative of the fact that investors are now starting to lock in a hedge. They're starting to think about the potential for whole yield curves to go negative. And the real potential that the two standouts globally of the major economies, which are the UK and the USA, could potentially also move towards negative interest rates, or at least zero interest rates and negative yields. And that's a significant challenge in terms of the purchasing power of currencies, because there is a real potential that the next big push is going to be for additional fiscal stimulus, whether that takes the form of helicopter money, massive infrastructure spending, massive military spending, or any combination of those, whether it is representative of provision of free education, free health care, and the creation of opportunity zones, whatever it is you want to call them, all of that is going to require additional funds, and those funds are going to be printed into existence. These are the kinds of conditions where currencies really do take it on the chin. So rather than, and I think this is where valuing gold as a monetary metal gives us some real insight, because it isn't so much that gold is breaking out in dollars. It's that gold is breaking out in more currencies, that it is at a new high in euros. It has been performing in the Australian dollar for a while now. When we think about it in terms of the renminbi, it has cleared the 9,000 level, and in fact it broke out first in renminbi. And that is the resolution of a very significant ranging phase. These are important points. It's not so much that gold is doing well in a single currency. Gold does best when it is performing in all currencies. And we're seeing that now. When we think about it in British pounds, it found support and consolidated around the £1,000 level. And now it's north of £1,100. It looks quite likely that it is going to get back to the highs in 2011 in pretty short order. And there is a very clear argument that it could easily exceed those peaks because we're really only starting to see a move in gold. So this does look like also an undervalued asset. One of the other things that I've noticed in here over the last few days, I reweighted the autonomies portfolio. And one thing that I also saw today was that IBM is about to be inducted into the S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats. Well, that means that they have been increasing their dividends for 25 consecutive years. And now the price is right in the region of what is effectively a 2.5-year progression of lower rally highs. If it can sustain the move above 140, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. What I also found interesting is that we tend to concentrate on the kinds of companies that are really doing well in this type of scenario. And Oracle, in particular, has been rallying very impressively over the course of the last couple of days. But what I also thought was rather interesting is some of the companies that have been doing particularly badly are also now starting to garner interest. So, for example, H&M collapsed because of the impending retail apocalypse, but it has a succession of higher reaction lows within its base, and the most recent dynamics have been on the upside, and it does look likely that it is going to complete that base. Mattel has also had a really quite profound pullback, considering that it was trading at $47 back in 2013 and it's at 10 today. Well, people might not be that interested in Cindy anymore, but the reality is that this is still a significant company producing toys. There is also the potential that Toys R Us is going to open up again, and that could be really rather beneficial for toy manufacturers. But the risk here is rather contained, that it will look wrong. It would look like an additional downward move if the price sustains a move below 10. If it were simply to break the progression of lower rally highs, it would be at 20. I mean, that is generally the way I tend to think of these things, is that it is effectively a 9-to-1 bet. And those are the kinds of odds that tend to be attractive to investors. Then, when we think about General Electric, well, it is one of the most unloved shares out there. It had a meaningful rebound at the beginning of this year, and now it is coming back up to the upper side of that range. So, a sustained move back above $11 would resume the bull market. So, it isn't as if there aren't value opportunities out there. There are certainly companies that have had very, very significant pullbacks and now exhibit clear base formation characteristics. What I think is also worth mentioning is that the total market, or the when we think about the performance of all shares, the majority are back above their trend mean. There are a significant number that are an increasingly large number that are breaking on the upside. And nonetheless, we're seeing a number of the investment banks talking about an earnings recession, and that they are pegging back earnings for the second quarter, and we're going to start to see the earnings really start to pick up, our earnings reports picking up around the 15th. So guidance has been coming down, and yet we're starting to see the S&P pushing on the upside. I think these are rather important points, that the stock market is performing one way and commentary is completely opposite. This is not something that is really what we would anticipate at really big market tops. But when we think about the broader market, there are certainly winners and losers, and the performance of the Russell 2000 is not inspiring. And the performance of the Dow Transportation Index is very similar. So there are still portions of weakness. There are still points where we need to see some, I think, improvement. And that's also true of the regional banking sector. And when we think about the fact that housing starts have been pulling back, we're at the point where the Federal Reserve really does need to be cutting interest rates, that there has been an impact from the trade war, and that is difficult to measure. Whereas the lagged effect of monetary policy does tend to, I think, is reasonably well understood, would probably be the best way to think about it. There is the potential that this bull market can be rescued, but we're going to have to see a continuation of the willingness of central banks to anticipate economic data rather than wait for it. That is the, I think, the biggest takeaway from everything we've seen over the last while. But that if they do continue to do that, that virtually ensures we're going to have a continued liquidity provision. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.